If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Dominic Swantoski, the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. We're almost to the halfway mark for season 3 of this Troutbitten Podcast, and we have 15 episodes lined up that goes to early July. The more we do this, the more we're all reminded that there are endless topics for discussion here. You surely realize by now that our goal is a deep dive into these topics. The Troutbitten Podcast is a different format than most. It's not a new guest every week. It's just us. And the objective with each episode is to really examine the topic between the six of us by keeping an open mind and learning a few things. I know we all enjoy these weekly visits with each other too. It's really just longtime fishing friends sitting down with a beer and sharing fishing stories and ideas. Not much different from what usually happens without the record button engaged. So thanks again to you, the listeners, and to the Troutbitten Podcast sponsors for making it happen. All right, tonight's theme is finding your water and finding space. On the river, every angler wants to fish somewhere new, someplace untouched. That's something we all kind of wish for. Many anglers dream of destination fishing where there's not a boot track in sight. And even if your lifestyle does support that possibility, you still wish for days on your home water without many anglers around. These days, one of the most common complaints heard among fishermen is about crowded waters. People say there are more anglers than ever and that you can't get away from all the fishermen out there. But I think you can. And in turn, one of the most common questions I receive is, how to find the offbeat waters? Where are the places that everyone doesn't fish? Well, inevitably, people ask about these places because they want to see fewer anglers. It's something we all want. We all want those novel experiences. Something about trout fishing, about catch and release, and about throwing flies attracts the explorer. Long-term anglers are most often the adventurers. They're the pathfinders, the ones who find the qualities of solitude and peace more important than fishing big-name waters or catching a bunch of trout. But there is space out there for everyone, I promise. Well, for probably 95% of anglers out there, peace and seclusion is there for you if you seek it. And if you put in just a bit of time, and if you're thoughtful about your choices, willing to do some research and put some miles on your boot soles, what you seek is there. So that's what we're here to talk about tonight. We want to find our water. And in turn, find enough space that our minds can rest and relax into that experience of fishing. That's our desire when we think about a fishing trip. All of us here wish for that escape, just like you. And I can tell you for certain, each one of my friends here knows how to find some space. So here's the Troutbitten crew. In no particular order, I will note, no one is more important than the next. Here's Austin Dando, Bill Dell, Matt Grobe, Trevor Smith, and Josh Darling. Friends, how are you doing?
Good.
Dandy.
Thanks for protecting my feelings.
Right.
It's finally my week to go first, and I get the caveat. You gotta be kidding me.
Maybe we should just, I think maybe last should become first and then just, you know, down the line. I don't really want to show any favoritism here.
So good of you.
I tell you what. So let's tell everybody this. We usually guess how long the podcast is going to be after. That's what we should do.
There you go.
That's right. We usually guess how long the podcast is going to be. Let's say, I'll guess an hour and 15, and Matt guesses, okay, I'll say it's going to be an hour and 12 minutes and 13 seconds, you know? And whoever's closest, we say, is the winner, but we haven't found a prize yet for the winner. We thought about a case of beer.
No, we talked about the prize.
Oh, I'm sending you leaders.
I'm still waiting on my leader.
That's right. So the first prize, it was going to be leaders, and it's coming. But I think, if nothing else, the winner should be listed first the following week.
You know. I like it.
That's not bad.
Right. I like it.
That's something.
Good, about if you? How about the end of the season one? You pick a topic.
No. See that relinquishes my control.
Come on, that's why the pressure's on, Dom.
Right. I know. If I still wanted control, I'd have to win every week, huh? Then I just have to cheat even more.
Yeah. Exactly.
No. See, that's these true. Guys think that I cheat every week because I'm the one who does the editing. And they think that, I'm just going to shave a few minutes here or there.
Yeah. It's like the guy who's the banker in Monopoly and just keeps feeding himself the cash.
That's a good analogy.
It's the same thing.
That's really good.
But just like Trevor's very honest with his measurements of big trout, I'm very honest with the editing.
I'm over honest. I shave inches off.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to exaggerate anything like that. Hey, we're still getting questions from listeners. Thanks very much. Let's do this one. Trevor, you want to read it?
I do. So this one comes from William Hilson, all the way from Colorado. Dom, please thank your crew for all the entertaining podcasts since you've started. I've followed your website since 2015, and I was delighted to see you start a podcast. Glad to see the sponsorships too. You've earned it. I listened to the Hatches and Strategies episode twice because I'm a dry fly first angler, and I was excited to hear your take on such things. I was surprised to hear that all of you are generalists when it comes to fly patterns, because I'm a big believer in having exactly the right dry fly. I often dedicate a full box to just one hatch, with at least a dozen variations of patterns to show the trout. This works for me. But it seems you are all saying that I might do just as well with an Adams in all the right sizes. Is that right? I have a hard time believing it. What am I missing?
Wow. Yeah, I think it's a good question. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about this after I listened to it again when we recorded that episode. And I think we're all saying, like, look, the majority of everybody's focused in central PA. I'm focused out in Montana. We love, fishing those limestone spring creeks. I love fishing freestoners. I think in general, right, we can get away with fishing those Adams patterns, as we're casually changing tactics, as bugs emerge, heads start popping, we're nymphing through the early stages of the hatch and then throwing emergers and then throwing dry flies. So I think that's kind of, and I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody, but that's kind of our mindset, right? If I were to go and focus most of my time on a true spring creek with glassy water and my goal was to target heads and that's it, I think I would have much more selections in my box, right? To target that. And look, in Colorado, there's some really famous tailwaters that are known for their picky fish where you may need to present different patterns to catch that particular fish, especially if you're targeting certain fish. And look, I know guys that's what they do. I mean, they love
one fish at a
targeting
time.
Fish. Yeah, yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. And in that case, maybe our generalistic approach wouldn't be the most successful. What do you guys think?
I think you did a really good job laying out probably what all of us would say in some degree, Grobe. I think there's space between a bunch of atoms in different sizes and 12 different patterns per hatch, and I think all of us fall somewhere in that middle ground where, no, we don't carry most of us just one pattern, but we also don't carry 12 different patterns for the hatch. And I think one thing that we had mentioned during that Hatches and Strategies podcast was that there is some strategy or some utility to carrying at least a pattern that it mimics a different phase of that emerging insect, whether it be the high floating dry fly or that clinkhammer style that is a kind of emerging mayfly or even a parachute that kind of lies low in the film. So having some degree of variability with the position of that fly or with the style with which you are able to present it or what it appears like underneath the water, I think there's a lot of utility to that, because at different phases of the hatch, the trout very well may be queuing in on different types of insects or different phases of that hatch. But I'm curious to hear what the rest of you think.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, as you said, William, that's your approach is more of a dry fly first approach. And I really do admire that, because I think that it's extremely important to find something about this sport that you love and enjoy getting better at. And that's what keeps you out there on the water. And we all know that more hours of practice put in, whether it's on the river or behind the bench, is going to refine your skill in that, I mean, to the utmost. And so I would assume that if you enjoy dry fly fishing the most and that's what keeps you out there and you have learned to be effective with it, I think that it's probably a good approach to really get detailed with your ties as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're fortunate enough to go out and be able to actually fish a hatch from the beginning of the emergence, you know, to 4 days into the emergence and 5 days into the emergence, mm-hmm. and you're sitting at a pool, you know, it is cool to be able to develop a pattern that, you know, maybe those fish start getting smart on that right particular on. Pattern.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yep.
And you can switch it up with a biot body, more realistic, you know, lower profile, and pluck each one of those heads out of, you know, that are rising. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing to go after.
I have plenty of times too when I become a dry fly first angler. I kind of like to do it during hatches. I especially do it during the summer. That's kind of terrestrial fishing. Anyway, even when I'm a dry fly first angler, I'm not the kind of angler like you said, Matt. I don't really like to set up over one fish. And so if I do find a difficult fish, I'll be honest, I might change two times maybe. But for me, that'd be a lot. And then I go, okay, tip my cap to that fish, move on, because I'm probably going to get the next one on that parachute Adams or whatever I'm using. Mm-hmm. So that's my game. That's what I enjoy doing. One of the best fly fishing friends I ever had, a great mentor, his name was Rich. He loved setting up over one fish. He'd throw a couple patterns at it. He'd smoke a cigar, rest the fish, you know, and just not move his boots for an hour at a time. And he would change five or six times, you know, in a flat, in a pool, you know, in some real soft water. That was his thing. Just give him a riser and he was happy. Not my game. Never was. And it might be at some point. It might be tomorrow, you know, and at some stage in my life, I might say, I love that more than anything. That's cool. If I would ever get to that point that, yeah, I'm probably going to want more flies to change to. And maybe sometimes it really does make that difference. I'm sure it does.
A couple things that come to mind is the water type. So yeah. Fish in calmer water are going to be much pickier. So if you're fishing a river that has a lot of flat water versus a river that has a lot of riffles and surface disturbance, the fish are going to be more picky in a flatter water. This weekend, I did go with a dry fly. The last couple hours of the day, I just went down to the river, took dry flies, and fished dry flies in the evening. And the thing this weekend that was the key seemed, it wasn't necessarily a fly change, it was a presentation change.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, there were crane flies that were coming back to the water.
Neat.
And they were skating along the water and fish were just launching themselves out of the water. And so for about an hour or so, I worked a dead drift and couldn't get the fish to eat. And so I switched the presentation to locate where the fish was. And then I would skate the fly to about where the fish was rising. And then I would pause it. And that skate was a huge difference. Mm. Like the strikes went up twofold.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's think cool. about your presentation sometimes.
Yeah, for too. Sure. You try stuff outside of the box.
Yeah, I think what I hear all of us saying is a version of there is not a one right way and one wrong way to do this.
Yeah.
You know, despite the fact that many of us agreed on the fact that we tend towards generalism in our presentations, whatever catches fish for you and whatever you find enjoyable and effective, more power to you.
Yeah.
I think we should have a trout bitten tournament with like everybody gets five realistic patterns and we'll go to a very finicky spring creek and see who can catch the most fish. That'd be kind of cool.
I was going to say too, I mean, just to wrap that up, the reason I go generalist is because I do think it catches me more fish in the end. You know, I think the general patterns, if we're just talking about, again, about a parachute atoms, it looks like so many things. That's my favorite dry fly, I would say. It looks like so many things. I could just have it in a handful of sizes and I can imitate almost anything that hatches. Enough.
Yep.
And I do think that at the end of the day, maybe not at the end of the day, but let's say at the end of the season, that approach, not just because I like it better, I think it actually catches more fish for me. But I also has to go hand in hand, again, with me like willing to cover a bunch of water and not get tied up into just one fish that's being super selective.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good question. Yeah.
Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure.
Tactical Fly Fisher was started in 2015 by Fly Fishing Team USA angler Devin Olson, with a mission to bring American anglers the techniques and gear that dominate the international competitive fly fishing scene. While you may have no desire to compete, you can still benefit from the same strategies which competitive anglers use to make them more successful on the water. Whether you want to buy your nymphing rod, a stillwater fly line, or just some hooks and beads to fill your fly box, we've got you covered. And our teaching materials will help you learn how to use whatever products fill up your cart. Head on over to thetacticalflyfisher.com and use the code TFF10 to get 10% off flies, fly tying supplies, or terminal tackle.
All right, let's move into our topic, how to find your water and find your space out there. Again, a common complaint is about the number of anglers on the water, that you just couldn't find a piece of river for yourself. But the truth is, there is open trout water out there, and you just have to find it. So let's start with this. Let me ask you guys, are there more anglers than ever on the water? Do you think so?
I would say yeah, or at least more educated anglers, I think, than I've seen. Because of social media and some of the books that have come out, I feel like I see more distribution of anglers across rivers.
Okay.
I think if you look at the industry as a whole, you know, it's grown pretty rapidly over the last 10, 15 years. I think the answer almost has to be yes.
Mm-hmm. Spoke about this a little bit last week, but I had a good friend attend a reputable conference, you know, of a large company in the industry, and their estimates are about 800,000 new anglers since COVID in the industry. And I...
Fly fishers.
And right. That's not people that have picked up rods, you know, because they forgot how much they love fly fishing. That's new anglers. Mm-hmm. And I would just say that since COVID, from my viewpoint, mm-hmm. which is more Montana-based than Pennsylvania-based, I absolutely have seen the rise in pressure out here on the famous stuff.
So I guess my experience is a little bit different. I agree. I would agree that there are more anglers than ever, but I'll put it this way. I don't run into them. I've been guiding these central PA waters for 5 years or something like that. And today we saw zero anglers. And last year, you know, on this date on May 2nd, I would have expected to see one or two, whatever. You know, I kind of expected to see one or two today. Saw zero. But that kind of leads into the, you know, how you find your waters. It's kind of a game to me to guess where people are going to be. The habits of anglers are very mm-hmm. predictable. And I know you're all very good at this, actually. Once you know your waters, you know your areas, and you know the trends, the habits of anglers, you can find your space. So there are more anglers than ever. But I believe it's not all that difficult in most places to find your space. If you're willing to give up some things or, you know, trade in.
So I think what you're trying to say is there's more anglers, but they're also as predictable as the anglers that came before them.
Ooh, there you go. Thank you.
Good way of putting it.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree with that a lot. This weekend I fished and it was supposed to rain really heavy on Sunday. And I went to a popular river thinking it was, you know, I got there. I slept in and I got there at 6:30 and I was like, oh man, there's going to be people everywhere.
Yeah.
And I fished till 10:30 and I didn't see an angler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, and then I just kept hopping popular spots and decided like, okay, you know, everyone thought it was going to rain too hard today. Yeah. So I don't know. That's one of the ways I get away is when the weather conditions suck, go out and fish.
What day of the week was it?
Sunday.
Crazy, right? Yeah. And I saw the same thing. That was yesterday. I saw the same thing. I drove on the most popular piece of water. It's about 4 miles between, well, this bridge and that bridge. And I'm on that road almost every day. And it's a little game I play with myself. How many cars am I going to see? I do cars, not necessarily anglers, because you can't always see the water. And I saw one car. It was a local guy who's like always out there. I know who he was. And nice guy. Fishes real hard. I figured I would see zero or one. And I saw one. And why? Because it was raining.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's funny. I'll add to that. I was out yesterday too. I was actually guiding a couple guys.
Yeah.
And in a popular access, and the forecast said it was going to rain for 3/4 of the day. And it took until noon for me to run into anybody. And it was like one guy.
There you go.
But I expected there to be more. Happily, I was incorrect.
Well, yeah, I would kind of expect it. I know where you were. It was Sunday, man. You know?
Right.
But it's that weather that keeps them away. So we're all agreeing that weather is a big thing that keeps people away,
Huge factor.
Absolutely.
Yep. It might be the biggest.
And that's where we find our space.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever think that the weekend secretly, like everybody wants to play the midweek game because by default we're programmed thinking that if you go Monday or Wednesday or Thursday, you're going to have the most solitude. And I know out here, at least for me, that sometimes I'm shocked at like the weekend, whether it's travel days or people. I mean, you got to think, what is, everybody has birthday parties and concerts and baseball games and you know what I mean? So sometimes it's not so bad to be a weekend warrior.
You got to outthink the other thinkers.
I think that's, it's a great point.
Yeah. Hey, you brought up baseball games. Okay. So we're here in Penn State country. One of the best times to go fishing on a Saturday in the fall is right during the game. Everybody else is
sacrilege.
Yep.
Right.
And then, so I DVR it and then I'll go home. You get like any piece of water you want to yourself.
I'm going to start texting you the score.
I was going to say, Trevor, you have it in your ear no matter what you're doing anyhow.
I do.
Right.
I do.
Interesting.
Yeah. I like the radio broadcast.
When I was at Penn State, I used to swear fishing on Wednesdays was the best fishing you could have.
Yeah.
Because it was in that sweet spot between the end of the weekend and before the start of the next one. And it just seemed like that was the maximum isolation zone for an angler.
Thursday too. Thursday might be my favorite.
I don't know. Wednesday.
It's a game, man. It's Wednesday or Thursday. It's a game. It's fun to try to predict it.
Friday is like the new Saturday, I feel like.
Is that right? Tell us about that.
I feel like every time I take a Friday off, and I'm on the water, I'm just like, man, not a lot of people work on Fridays anymore.
Well, they're supposed to be working from home, but they're not.
Gosh, I saw that this week. Big. I was trying to take my son fishing, and I had like everything loaded up, backpack ready to go. We had like 3 hours tops. Mm. And we went, I was like, we'll drive to a pretty remote spot. And everyone was on the water on Friday.
Do you know why? They stocked that.
Yeah.
I know where you were, right?
Oh,
I didn't realize that. When you texted us that, you're like, what'd you say? Everybody alive.
Yeah, I said everybody in the world was
everybody
was
in the world is on this river.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I'm surprised, you know, because, you know, I knew where you were. And I thought, that wouldn't have been my prediction. Well, 2 days later.
Wasn't mine either. Yeah.
Right. I talked to one of my baseball coaches and he said, oh, yeah, they stocked that down there. I said, there you go.
Crazy.
Yeah. We were talking about weather. It's funny, regularly when we got a cold and rainy and dreary day that generally you'd want to stay inside. I'll make a remark like, oh, it's, you know, great weather for fishing, or man, what I wouldn't give to be on the river right now. And I'll get like a raised eyebrow, or people will think that I'm being sarcastic and joking. But it's just because I think that our assumption that people know that, you know, brown trout don't like sun is not as well known as we think it is.
For sure. we did a podcast in season one about the weather, you know, and the, about the different elements that we face. And there's always something you're battling out there, whether it's sun or cold or wind and rain and snow and sleet, all that and more, river conditions, anything. There's always things that you're battling. And people just, I mean, it's fair to say, people want it easy. And then they also will make the mistake of thinking that those bluebird, sunny sky days, the water a little on the low side because it's easy to wade, that's the best day. Oh, that's the worst day. It's just the worst.
Yeah. Matt, do you see much of a difference? The weather's consistent out there. Like, do you?
Well, so this time of year, I would say from October till end of May out here is very inclement weather, whether that's a lot of snow or, you know, right now we're getting a ton of rain. Thank God we're getting that rain, but it's been inclement, windy, just, you know, not very nice. But having said that, Bill, I think there's the peak time, right? When runoff subsides and fishing seasons tend to, you guys hit it on, you know, you can fish all year back in Pennsylvania, but the prime fishing for what most people think ends around, you know, 4th of July or whatnot out there. And their minds, they start taking trips out west. I mean, I know a ton of people from Pennsylvania that come out to the western states, July and August, the summer, or the weather is going to be bluebird, sunny. And I think people enjoy that. And I don't know how much they're really, you know, there's more to it than the fish catching, right? We're all trout bitten. We're all
good
nuts.
Point.
We have one thing on our mind. But I think a lot of people just want that comfortability, the scenery, you know.
That's a really
go
good point.
Go out to
point.
Lunch. Yeah, you know, that's a contingent, right? That's a large contingent of people.
I almost forget about that. Yeah.
And that's a good reason to do it too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's what you enjoy, right? I mean, we're nuts, Dom. I mean, I haven't met.
It's true.
I mean it. I mean, how many people have you ever come across that are as nuts as us? I mean, we're pretty wacky.
That's why we get along. Not many of us.
It's 15 degrees outside. I want to go stand in a river.
Yeah.
Like if you tell that to a sane human being, like I'm excited to go stand in a river and it's 15 degrees out. And you tell that to someone, they look at you like you got a third arm.
Right. And one of the reasons we're all excited about it at 15 degrees is because we know that we can have so many pieces of water all to ourselves. These stretches of water that I'll fish right now, because it's May 2nd, and I say, people are going to park here, people are going to park there, it's this day, it's that day. You know, I'll choose more offbeat pieces of water now. And then in the winter, I say, almost everything's going to be open. It's 15 degrees, you know, and you got snow flying. Yeah. Or it's early in the morning. It's going to be all mine. I love it.
Take it to another level. I mean, that's, I think that's just it. And I don't think any one of us here would be content any other way, but to think that way day in and day out, we have the, you know, we're trout bitten for a reason. And, and I don't know. It's just, we're obsessed about it.
There are definitely other anglers out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who are diehard about it in different ways and are in the same ways. But man, there's not enough of them to really populate the rivers when it's 15 degrees in January on Wednesday Thursday, Austin.
Right. Yeah. Or Thursday, Austin.
So the weather is the thing, man. Do you like fishing through the heat? Is that a thing for you? Do you go, man, it's really hot out here. Nobody else is going to like it. So I'm going to get out.
I'm more apt to stay in if it's too hot.
Yeah.
No, not at 2 a.m.
There you go. Go ahead.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. When it gets warm, I'm like, oh, well, this is perfect. I'll go to sleep at 8 and I'll sleep until 10 and then we'll go fish the rest of the night.
That's another way to avoid the crowds, man. If you really want space, become a night fisherman.
That's right.
I mean it.
Yep.
You can have whatever space you want.
I've bumped into people twice while I was night fishing. All those years, just twice. Once people walked in on me on purpose, and the other time I just walked across a bridge and a guy started yelling at me, get that light off. I'm like, sorry, bud, I really didn't know you were down there. Fair enough. And I just kept going.
Yeah, very similar. Yeah, maybe
maybe
twice. And I don't think I've been night fishing as long as you, Dom, but I know that Trevor and I have run into people twice. And in both cases, it was a more likely location to run into people. As soon as you start to combine both things, like one, go out at night and also go to an area that is harder to access, then you really eliminate that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a special feeling, you know, just having, I think in the warmer weather, having just a piece of water that you just know deep down is all yours.
That's right.
I think you get that in the winter as well. And I think that's why a lot of us love the winter.
That's the draw.
But yeah, I think there is something special about knowing, gosh, this piece of water is mine and I'll work it as slow or fast as I want. And I can work it back upstream, downstream. And, you know, it's just, it's a different feeling.
Yeah. On the flip side of this, the early morning, you know, first light before the sun peaks over the mountain.
Right on.
Yeah, fishermen like to get an early start, kind of. But kinda, if you really like to get an early start, you can often have that popular water to yourself for the first 2 hours or so.
Oh, yeah, at least.
Get what you can from it, and then just enjoy the rest of your day as it comes.
So true.
Yeah, that's one thing that I enjoy for sure out here, but I think it does come with thoughtful consideration on the fact, and this is more me speaking on behalf of Montana, but the dry fly fishing is pretty limited when you go first light, right? And so if you want to you want to be a guy that wants to throw dry flies, which, you know, you guys are talking about how hot it is, like summer wet wading out here with bushy attractors is like my favorite thing to do, right? And so a lot of times if I choose to do that, I'm electing to join everybody else that wants to do that as well. And so it's almost like I'm going to sacrifice. You need to accept it, right? I could either go first light, have a great morning nymphing, but boy, there's only 8 weeks of summer out here. And I really want a fish to eat a stimulator. And so then it goes into all these other things we may talk about, you know, what strategies do we have to combat that prime time of the day?
Yeah. So another thing we're saying here is to find water for yourself. You want to be a versatile angler, you know, so that you can fish confidently, fish those morning hours at all, in all seasons. We acknowledge, hey, we're talking about fishing 15 degrees in January. Here, we're not going to have much dry fly action, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
And so being a well-rounded angler opens up more water for you.
So that's how I've kind of developed fishing so fast, is because a lot of times I like to get out early and I'm just going to cherry pick a couple hundred yards of water before the crowds show up. And so I'm just, you know, 10 good drifts, move on, hit the next pocket. Basically, I'll park somewhere that I have a long area to cover.
Right.
And I'll just fish until I run into people. And then once I run into people, I'll walk back to the car and then I'll drive down to a different section. And so in our rivers around here, there are different designations. There's fly fishing only. There's catch and release. There's class A. There's class B. And trout don't know those lines. And so if you're looking for other parts of a river, if a river or a stream has wild fish in it, there's a good chance that they're throughout it. And so if the water's open and not posted and you're allowed to fish it, drive down 3 miles and fish it.
Yeah.
Especially in the colder months, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. Special regs areas really draw a lot of anglers. Here, it's catch and release here. It's Trophy Trout Project here. It's whatever your state calls your special regulated trout waters. Boy, that gets like 10 times the amount of pressure, I think it's fair to say, you know? And like you're saying, Bill, those trout are spread out. They're above the regs area. They're below it. And you know what? Even if they weren't, that's where you're going to find your space. That's the answer. You know, even if there's only half as many fish 3 miles below the catch and release area, so what? If what you really want is space, go fish there, you know?
Those fish might be dumber and easier
absolutely
to catch too.
Right, right. You might have that kind of more pure experience.
I think there's a few rivers around here that I also kind of, I'll use my wading aggressiveness to kind of access areas of the river that are a little bit less hit on. And you've got a cool article, Dom, called We Wade. And it kind of embodies, I think, this spirit of a lot of us, you know, thank God that while we're still able to physically, you know, get into some of these locations that might challenge younger or older or less sure-footed anglers, or waders that don't commonly use a wading staff either. But, you know, I've had a lot of good fishing on the opposite bank of, you know, a popular section of river while people are fishing all up one and down one side of the river just because it's difficult to get to. And that, for me, has often been a satisfying way to find space.
That's pretty cool, Trevor. I think that's lines up with, you know, this, all these tactics we're talking about, clearly all of us have in mind that the places we're going to, we anticipate other people being there or maybe people showing up later, right? It's safe to say we're fishing more heavily pressured waters. And so the tactics to, you know, it's the game Dom mentioned, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the game. So when you're...
Habits of anglers are predictable.
Yeah. What am I going to do? And yesterday was a prime example for me. I fished one of the more famous freestoners, you know, right outside of town. Didn't get to go till 1 o'clock. And so, like you, Trevor, I pick the gnarliest water.
Nice.
That is just nasty to wade. And it looks nasty, right? There's a visual... impression that happens as you're driving by certain places where people would be like, "Eh, man, that looks a little
it's intimidating,
tricky, right?
Looks a little sketchy."
And when you, and it was so neat because when, and it was a section that I may have only fished once before, and I got down there, and when you're down there, it's a little less intimidating, and all of a sudden, the back eddies were just filled with fish rising.
Nice.
They were just chomping blooming olives.
I love it.
And you're not going to see it from the road. You're, you know, and the only way to do it is to get down there, bash your shins off some rocks. And that's what it took for me to have an awesome day on a Sunday on a world famous river. Right.
Yeah. I love it.
And you can, to the point, you know, Dom's point, you can do it. You just got to put some time and effort into wanting to do it.
Sure.
Love it. That's cool.
If you want to maximize your time on the water, you need to have all your patterns well organized. Fulling Mill offers a custom range of fly boxes with the Euro nymphing angler in mind. Made from a strong polycarbonate with dense slotted foam, they're extremely durable. From the Pocket Box, which is perfect for anyone who likes to keep it fast and light, to the Tactical Max, which has a middle page and can hold up to 960 flies, you'll be covered for any situation. To check out all 7 of the custom fly boxes, go to fullingmill.com or ask for them at your local dealer. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others.
Another thing I think about too is imagine your river and imagine the accesses on that river. You want to think about places that are inconvenient to get to.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that I kind of categorize those inconveniences is space between them. So I like to think about, all right, Which two axes are the farthest spaced apart on this entire creek or on this entire river? Okay.
Go to
the middle of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because people don't want to walk down and people don't want to walk up, but I will.
Yeah, parking is a strategy.
Yeah.
That's a big part of this game. And you know what? Here's the thing. None of us are privileged in any way here. What I often think about is, hey, when I was newer to the game, when I first got to this area, where did I go? You know, where were all those places that I had to fish? And seriously, when I was new, I fished all the same places that the current new people fished.
Yeah, and maybe not newer people, and maybe it's just the people that have been fishing for a long time, but only fish once every couple months.
Yeah, that too.
I think back to where I used to go, and those are the places that, I know most people are going to go. I mean, why wouldn't you fish that one of the most popular accesses? Like, you have to fish $3 bridge, right, Matt?
Yeah, right? You hit it on the head, man. Yeah.
Seriously, Dad and I fished it when we were out there. We didn't fish it for long because it was one of the only places we went where there were a bunch of people. And we went, well, this is dumb. Everybody else is here.
Would you guys agree that majority of the time, distance that it takes to walk into the river is the primary factor?
Oh, yeah.
It is until you walk into the next access.
Sure.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's the caveat.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yes,
so distance from any access.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be easy to tell. Like,
And easy tell is a well-beaten path, right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to find a place of river all to your own, then don't go where it's obvious that the ground has been beaten down by wading boots. You know, walk until you have to kind of blaze your own trail into the river, and then you're going to be in an okay spot.
Or even how beat up is the pull off? You know, is it real muddy and does it have trash in it and tippets, spools and stuff?
Excellent point.
Yeah, you can tell. You can tell how popular is this piece.
How fresh are the boot tracks?
Yeah. Yeah, you find that little piece around the corner and you go, are you even allowed to park here? Yeah, I guess I am. I'm going to try. That'll get me in there. I mean, we could talk about, you know, you can look on maps and try to plot your course and look, well, hey, this is between access areas. You can do all that. That's a great strategy. And especially if you're new to the area. I mean, I remember doing that.
I feel like Google Maps has been the huge breakthrough to allow someone that is not technically savvy enough to read a map to just click on a button and it'll take you to that spot.
Sure.
And so, I don't know, back, you know, when I first started fly fishing, Google Maps was kind of starting up. I think I had a TomTom, and so I would use that in my car. But just the ability to look at a river and look at a map and like the Fish Commission says, okay, you're, you know, this stream has trout in it, and so let me click on an access, and then Google Maps will take you right there, and as long as there's signal. Some of the northern parts of the state right now in PA don't have the best signal, and so you kind of get back into that older style of, okay, let me get out the gazetteer and the maps, and let me, okay, I'm back in here, and I'll, you know, Google Maps will take me here, but then when I got to leave, I don't have service to get out.
Yeah. You do have to think ahead.
Yeah, you do. I think
download it on Onyx.
That works too, right? I mean, I've heard people complaining about, you know, there's so much information out there, and now you're saying about Google Maps too. You really can. If you want to be ambitious at all, you can get yourself into all kind of areas that people maybe didn't know about before. But it's a positive thing too in the way it spreads people out. And yeah, if you have enough go-getters out there, things will spread out. And again, you find those lesser known waters.
So in this day and age, we have, you know, things like interactive maps online for your state, where you can categorize, okay, I want to see all the Class A streams, all the wild reproduction streams. And I know most of us within 20, 30 minutes, we probably have a dozen, two dozen plus Class A brook trout streams that are probably the next thing to a guarantee of a day of solitude.
Yeah. It's a rough life, having that many.
Yeah, it really is.
I said earlier we weren't privileged, but I suppose, you know, in many ways we are.
With
that wealth of opportunity.
I'll split the day up often, and I'll fish the popular water until I start running into people, and then I'll go find a mountain stream, and then just, like Austin's saying, you've got one access point, you park, you fish until you're too tired, and then you walk back and call it a day.
I like that strategy.
Bill, along with that, like just the whole brookie trout fishing, how many of us have always heard, oh, I'm not walking that far for an 8-inch trout?
Well, yeah.
Right? And so, but seriously, like you strategize and you want to immerse yourself in nature and just appreciate solitude, and you can find pleasure in catching beautiful, wild, native, you know, native 8-inch brook trout.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a big push for that, right? I mean, if there's not big fish, your percentage automatically of running into people is going to go down. Maybe that's just me, but I feel like of these 800,000 new anglers, how many have big fish on the mind?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Like, and to your point, Grob, it is a different type of experience. There's a level of patience and kind of tolerance sometimes that you have to take into account of walking through some of those rhododendron choke streams and blazing your own path. Yeah, but that's kind of like paying your toll or whatever, you're paying your way in order to have that experience. There's some give and take.
But if you want to have your space, if you really want that peace and solitude, it's there on those backcountry streams.
Yeah.
Like we're saying, if you park at the bottom of one of those tribs and you start walking up, let's say most of them don't have an upper access. You just keep walking up into the mountain and there you are. And it's yours. It really is almost any time of the year. Oh man, almost never do I see anybody. I just go me and my dog and get up into the woods.
I don't think I have ever seen anybody when right. that was my goal. I don't think I've ever seen one person.
It's very predictable. You can have your space out there. That's almost a guarantee.
Do you guys enjoy doing that solo, or do you enjoy bringing like one of your close buddies to do that with?
You know what's really fun is if you have kids. It's an awesome way to take them because they can mm-hmm. walk beside you the whole time, and then you're almost never going to run into a situation where you have to wade something that they can't, or where you mm-hmm. have to be more than 10 feet away from them and still be able to cast into the spot.
Nice. And there's no road.
Right, exactly.
The yeah. other things
and
to
I
think about.
And I can't get swept away by the current.
Yeah, did that with my oldest daughter last week, and it was awesome.
I think it's enjoyable both ways, Matt. I feel like sometimes it's really nice just to get away myself and, yeah, not see a person and be completely away from everything and just kind of get a peace of mind out of it. But it's also fun to go with a friend and just kind of one guy fishes, one guy harasses him and heckles him until he catches a fish. And then, you know, you switch the next pool and it's reverse. And so, yeah, they're both, I think, are really enjoyable at times.
Right.
I think that we're the right kind of friends that enjoy it together too. You know, we enjoy a lot of the same aspects of being mm-hmm. on those waters out in the middle of nowhere. And so the right person is a great person to bring her along.
Well, it's funny because our personalities are similar in the sense that, like, you saw what our tendencies are on the famous streams, right? We'll get up at 3:30, and Bill Dell will cherry pick all your holes before you even have a,
he's already
have a
been
coffee.
There. Exactly.
And in that other setting, we completely switch gears, though, right? Like, we can yeah. take one rod and appreciate it for what it is.
You can go out at noon.
And it's all about that mindset. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go out at noon. And mm-hmm. and it's yeah. that rush, right. though, the why I like doing that stuff is that rush. And I say rush, it's brought on myself in the sense that if I do want to get up early and work on tactics, A-B test, and I want to fish the prime stuff before mm-hmm. something. I mean, there's, you know, you get up early and I don't want to say rushing, but there's more mm-hmm. of a sense of that than mm. to Dom's point, you waking up at 12 with your you know, Chaco sandals and you just wade up a mountain creek and have a good old time. Maybe I'm the only one that has the Chaco sandals.
What are those? Made out of chocolate?
I got lost too, Bill.
They're like Tevas, but better.
I prefer the Teva. What are you talking about?
And they'll take a grip stud.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Chaco.
Right.
The Chaco soles are real thick. Austin is probably the only one who knows whether the Teva soles are thick.
Oh,
enough.
I definitely take a grip
My
stud.
My soles are
you
fine.
You can put grip studs in like sneakers, in like running shoes. Unless you're Bill, you're pressed through them.
Yeah, fat kid.
It's true.
Fat kid. Not fat kid proof yet.
Another way, you know, I love getting away from the crowd and even on a bright sunny day mm-hmm. is dropping by my sister-in-law's pond and fishing for catfish with my fly rod. And so I think opening up the opportunities to other species and even just other settings yeah. than we're typically fishing can sometimes give you a little bit of a day apart from others if the conditions otherwise would lead to there being a lot of fishermen where you want to fish mm-hmm. or if you just have a couple hours, be open to different settings and scenarios and even species than you might normally hit.
The stinky bass.
That's pretty cool.
Catch them stinky bass.
Stinky bass. Go stinky catch stinky bass. Bass. We are fortunate to have all this trout water available in so many different kinds. We get the backcountry streams. We have tailwater access in you know within range. And all the limestone streams. Yep, we're very fortunate. And yet, like yeah. you said, Trevor, you can, if you're 2 hours away from your nearest trout water, well, everybody would have smallmouth bass in between here and there. And if you really yeah, are looking sure. for that space and that peace, you'll have it. I mean, you're almost yep. always going to have it.
You got it.
Anything else, guys?
Yeah, Dom, I got two other things to consider, mostly back to the...
One at a time, Matt. One at a time.
The pressured water. We're back to the mm-hmm. more popular pressured water mm-hmm. and some strategies you can use to your advantage to find the solitude. One, I like to seek out high water, you know, mm-hmm. right at the cusp of it coming down from a thunderstorm and it's tea green and folks might be, you know, We'll wait till tomorrow. It's right. going to be good tomorrow,
yes,
right? If you can time it and try to get in there, there's fishy water. You just might have to, you know, you might not be able to wade where you used to wade. But there's an opportunity there that'll shed some anglers. And then the second one, and I more so out here, I kind of looked for it, but the waters out here are so big mm-hmm. and deep that sometimes that far bank is legitimately elusive for a couple miles, and it's not conducive to the side, you know, where the access is. So everybody wants to park, and the wading's sketchy, and at higher flows, it's almost impossible for most folks to do it. But if you want to pull like a crazy Brad Pitt moment and kind of, you know, traverse through a whitewater rapid, not to that extreme, but there's places you can cross for an aggressive angler, and boom, you might really have to plan where your exit is, but you might be able to find some solitude that way if you're willing to aggressively wade out into the currents.
Nice.
I think high waters, I think that's a good point. Like,
right,
high water really keeps people away. And so when I'm exploring, and the advantage of knowing a river really well is when the water comes up, you know, the spots that are like 6 or 8 inches deep that are now only 2 or 3 foot deep. And so I might gravitate to fish those instead of, I'm not going to go fish the heavy run at average flow. I'm going to fish the island that splits it apart and the, you know, the normal water that's 3 inches deep.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of this stuff is good. And so you can combine all of them. You know, if it's going to rain, the water's starting to rise. And so a lot of people are going to stay at home. So think to yourself, like, when is it going to be hard fishing? And if you think it's going to be hard fishing, then go out and fish, because a lot of the anglers will have that similar mindset and probably stay home.
I know that we've talked about this before. I think each one of us has talked about this, how we each went through a period in our life where we just had fishing time. Maybe it was years at a time or just a couple months, but we said, I'm going to fish like every day, or I have this every Sunday I can fish no matter what. So I'm doing it. And you don't even look at the forecast. You just go because it's Sunday, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Right. And then you start to realize, you know, Bill's saying, hey, go fishing when you think it's going to be hard. But what we realize is that so many times if you go fishing because it's Sunday, and even though the water's coming up quick and it's cold and it's whatever else, you don't think it's going to be great fishing. You're often surprised just because you're out there and you're fishing. Things will happen that you certainly can't predict. We all realize that.
You know, that short period of time, something special might happen. Like you take your son on a backpack and you fish for a couple hours and you catch this big fish.
Boom.
It's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. There it is. Finding your water and finding your space on the river. Thanks here to my friends, Austin Dando, Trevor Smith, Bill Dell, Josh Darling, and Matt Grobe. So all of us are saying that solitude on a trout stream is there for you if you truly want it. By putting in the time to learn your waters, you'll find the underfished areas. You'll learn that the headwaters of your home stream hold just as many trout as the popular section that meets the road. And here, among this wooded stream just 20 feet wide, the peace and seclusion you seek is there for you. It's a place where life slows down a bit and no one else will bother you. Or maybe do the opposite. By exploring downstream of the catch and release section, by going beyond what anglers talk about as the trout water, you wade into a marginal river. Maybe there are half as many trout, and maybe the creek runs behind a strip mall before merging with its parent river. But this too is water to call your own. And after a handful of casts to moving water and the prospect of a big trout, the imperfect surroundings fade away because you're alone. If you want space, if you want to find your own water, it's there for you. Think about where and when. Consider the conditions and learn to recognize the habits of anglers, because they are always predictable. So avoid every access with a clever name like Rainbow Riffle or $3 Bridge. Sure, the fishing might be great, but these are not the places to find your space. And if you roll up to a popular access of a blue ribbon trout stream, if it's noon on Sunday, if it's June with prime flows and sunny skies, then stop complaining about the cars and anglers. That's your choice. It's on you. And by making that choice, you're now part of the predictable habits of anglers. Hey, thanks for listening, and thanks for your support of the Troutbitten Project. Austin, will you read us out?
Yeah, man. So remember, troutbitten.com is a free resource for all anglers. With over 800 articles, there are stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and the tags, too. Thank you for listening to the Troutbitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave a comment, because that really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
This is dumb. Everybody else is here.
Bill Dell will cherry pick all your holes.
There you go.
Sometimes I'm shocked.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I pick the gnarliest water.
That's something, right?
I mean, we're pretty wacky.
That's why we get along.
Not a lot of people work on Fridays anymore.
I like that strategy.
You got to outthink the other thinkers.
Happily, I was incorrect.